Good morning to each one. Greetings in the name of Jesus. Good to be with you all this morning. Certainly, it does seem like the service has lended itself to Mother's Day, and I suppose that's intentional. And that's good. I want to read a quote that is in one of my flip-up calendars for every day. It says this: the church can preach and the school can teach, but the home must convert sermons and lessons into a way of life. Is that true? At home, in its practical everyday living, the rubber meets the road at home, doesn't it? At least that's the way it should be. Well, I pondered a few comments I've heard in the last few months. I was a number of miles away in a seasoned preacher said this, and he said, we need to change the way we preach Father's Day message and Mother's Day messages. He says, when we preach Father's Day messages, we say, men, you need to get your act together. When we preach Mother's Day messages, we treat them like queens. And then I was somewhere else. I was over at Garber's having revivals, and I heard a similar comment. So I had been thinking about that, and I also heard someone else say, and this was a mother that said, we know, after all mother goes through in a year's time, it's nice to have at least one Sunday where you're praised for all the things you do. And so anyway, I pondered those comments this past week, and so I decided to do neither. And I'd like to look at an example of a godly woman. You can turn with me to 2 Kings chapter 4. This is a familiar woman. I'd like to just look at her life and learn some lessons. And so this, while it will be geared towards the women here this morning, so it don't matter if you're here as a young lady, if you're here as a mother, if you're here as an older mother, a lot of your children are gone, I think there will be lessons here for us, for you. And we're just going to look at this and say, you know what, here was an example of someone who lived faithfully in their time and in their age, and there's an example to look at. And you can leave the other comments or take them however you want to think about them. So let's read this. This is a familiar story of the Shunammite woman. If you want a title, it's A Great Woman. 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8. And it fell on a day that Elisha passed to Shunam, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And so it was that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said unto her husband, behold, now I perceive that this is an holy man of God, which passeth by us continually. Let us make a little chamber, I pray thee, on the wall, and let us set for him there a bed and a table and a stool and a candlestick. And it shall be that when he cometh to us, that he shall turn in thither. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. And he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. And he said unto him, say now unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us for all this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. And he said, what then is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily, she hath no child, and her husband is old. And he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. And he said, about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thy handmaid. And the woman conceived and bare a son at that season. And Elisha said unto her, according to the time of life. And when the child was grown, it fell on a day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said unto his father, my head, my head. And he said to a lad, carry him to his mother. And when he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. And she called unto her husband and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men, and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath. And she said, it shall be well. Then she saddled a donkey and said to her servant, drive and go forward, slack not thy riding for me except I bid thee. So she went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass that when the man of God saw her afar off, that he said to Gehazi his servant, Behold, yonder is that Shunammite. Run now, I pray thee, to meet her, and say unto her, Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child? And she answered, It is well. And when she came to the man of God to the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to thrust her away. And the man of God said, Let her alone, for her soul is vexed within her, and the Lord hath hid it from me, and hath not told me. Then she said, Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, Do not deceive me? And he said to Gehazi, Gird up thy loins, take my staff in thine hand, and go thy way. If thou meet any man, salute him not, and if any salute thee, answer him not again, and lay my staff upon the face of the child. And the mother of the child said, As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. And Gehazi passed on before them and laid the staff upon the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Wherefore he went again to meet him and told him, saying, The child is not awaked. And when Elisha was coming into the house, behold, the child was dead and laid upon the bed. And he went in therefore and shut the door upon them twain and prayed unto the Lord. And he went up and laid upon the child and put his mouth upon his mouth and his eyes upon his eyes and his hands upon his hands. And he stretched himself upon the child, and the flesh of the child waxed warm. Then he returned and walked in the house to and fro, and went up and stretched himself upon him, and the child sneezed 7 times, and the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, Call this Shunammite. So he called her, and when she was come in unto him, he said, Take up thy son. Then she went in and fell at his feet and bowed herself to the ground and took up her son and went out. We'll stop there at this point. So, looking at some of the lessons, some of the qualities of this great woman, it calls her a great woman, and the word great there means that she was above average. Now, I think there's a lot of men think they have an above average wife, and so that's probably could be a fairly common term. But it means she was a great woman. Now, some people think she means she was wealthy. I don't know that she was extremely wealthy. The scriptures don't really say. You could get that idea from the fact that they built a room on the house, but that's about all. There were servants there, but it says she was a great woman. Now, I would like us to think about this. Greatness depends on what you're looking for and what your end goals are. Greatness depends on what you're looking for and what your end goals are. So let's just leave that thought. That was point number one. She was a great woman. We'll leave that thought, and we're going to pick it up at the very end. And so I want you to think about this as we go through the message, is what makes a great woman. And as we go through this and we look at her life, we look at how she lived her life, I believe there are lessons that we can apply for today. Number two, she had a servant heart. It does not appear like a committee came to her and said, Would you consider hosting Elisha for lunch here when he comes around? We don't read that. But it looks like by her own initiative, she went and she said, and she constrained him to eat bread. To me, that means, why don't you come eat supper with us tonight? And she took that initiative. And it was so... that it says that oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And so it appears to me that at that home, he found comfort, he felt welcome there. He wasn't talking to Gehazi, well, we ate there the last time, boy, I sure didn't feel comfortable. That's not the impression you get. He must have went there, he must have felt comfortable inside the home, and it says every time he came by, that was the place they stopped to eat. And so it appeared like she was genuinely hospitable. It came from her heart, something she wanted to do. It would appear like there was a trust relationship between the two, that the woman truly believed this was a man of God. After he stopped by a number of times, she said, I believe that this is a holy man of God. Let's consider doing something more. And I don't know what the construction process was back in those days, if it was a simple process, if it was a mud adobe huts, or how that was done. either way, there was some type of expense, I'm sure, and there was work and labor that went into making this happen. And I also noticed that there was attention to detail. A man can build a house, a man can build a quality house, but a woman makes it a home, right? And she took attention to detail. And it was in there, there was a bed, and there was a table, and there was a stool, and there was a candlestick. And I find it interesting because when I go away to preach and I stay somewhere, that's what you need. The bed's not hardly enough. You need a table and you need a stool. And well, you have the light switches, but the candlestick. And attention to detail. And so in her servant heart, she thought about what he needed and made sure that his needs were met there. Number three, she did not desire fame or popularity. This act of kindness was not done to exalt herself. And we know that because she had the chance to be spoken of to the king or to the chief captain. It would seem to me that there probably would have been a few perks to have your name mentioned to the captain of the host. Protection, right? Being mentioned to the king, you would think would somehow have some perks. However, I did think of, in light of her statement, and I thought of some other verses. I want to turn back and read them. 1 Samuel chapter 11. There may have been more behind why she said what she did, and would also show her as a woman of wisdom who did not quickly go for the perks in life, but rather considered what the end result could be. So, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 11, and here Israel's wanting a king. This Samuel is telling them in verse 11, and he said, "This will be the manner of king that shall reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over fifties, and he will set them to ear his ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. And he will take your daughters to be confectionaries and to be cooks and to be bakers. And he will take your fields and your vineyards and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them to his servants. And he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. And he will take your men servants and your maid servants and your goodliest young men and your asses and put them to his work." And then we see this in being carried out in 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 52. "And there was sore war against the Philistines all the days of Saul. When Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto him." And if you would go up through the kings, even King David, a righteous man, he used that system. Solomon used it more yet. And so, this is just my thoughts. I would like to suggest that there could have been more behind the fact that, no, I don't mention my name to the king or to the chief captain. I dwell among my own people. And that could have been simply saying, I don't want to go live in the king's palace to serve him or in any way. I want to dwell here where I'm at. So anyway, that could have been what she meant by that. But she did not desire fame or popularity. She did not desire to go beyond. She did not desire to go into the king's palace, into that kind of a lifestyle where there had been maybe some more popularity, possibly. Number four, she was a prudent woman. Proverbs tell us that a prudent wife is from the Lord. Proverbs 8:12 says, "I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions." And it's some of these points overlap. You can hardly help it. But she was a wise woman. Wise woman is from the Lord. She learned to observe before she acted. And I was reading an article written by a Jewish rabbi, it said. And it said that the Jewish rabbi, this is what they said I found interesting. The Jewish rabbis say that the reason that she considered him a holy man of God is because they believe that she was a very beautiful woman, and Elisha did not gaze upon her, and that is why she came to the conclusion that he was a holy man of God. And I found that interesting, that is what they said. That's why she thought he was a holy man of God. Now, you can do with that whatever you want. But I want us to notice that I think it's good and right for us to notice that he stopped by a few times, or however many times it was, before she made the suggestion, let's make a room for him. So she was a prudent woman. She learned to think before she acted. She learned to think about the implications. I think we see that in the last point of where her decisions might lead. The fact that she did not want to be spoken of before the king is another factor that shows she was a prudent woman. Number five, she had learned to be content with her lot in life. Now, she was barren and did not bear any children. And she could have easily moped around in life. She could have been selfish with her life, if you want to put it that way. But it appears, by all appearances, she made herself useful. She made herself, she fulfilled opportunities and responsibilities that possibly others were not able to. It would appear that way. And so she was content with her lot in life. And even when Elisha comes up and says, you're going to have a child, she says, don't lie to me. And I think I understand why she said that, because she had got to the point where she said, you know what, God, this is not for me. I accept this. I'm going to go on with my life. And to have that brought up was probably difficult. That's why she probably said, don't lie to me. Don't deceive me. And so she had learned to be content with her lot in life. And that is so important for all of us, because all of us are going to have different situations, different problems, different things, different circumstances. And yet we need to learn to be content if we're going to be useful in the kingdom of God. Number six, she learned to take her unsolvable problems to God. Now, I don't know, as far as her husband, it doesn't say a lot, other than it does appear they had a good relationship, as in she talked to him, you know, about building the chamber there. When the lad died, he sent the child to her, which was a normal response. And whenever she wanted to go to the man of God, she told her husband, send me a servant and one of the young men with one of the donkeys. And so it seems like that she had a connection there with her husband. It seems like possibly her husband maybe was one who was more concerned about getting the field crops in than he was his son. But I don't want to misjudge him. Not sure what it was there. But she had learned to take her unsolvable problems to God. And she knew that this was a problem that she could not solve. Her husband could not solve, and she needed God. And I know she went to the man of God, but I believe in her situation that was the closest connection she could get to God. Her first response was that she went and laid it on his bed. I find it interesting. I think that there was some thought process going on, that possibly the very man that spoke and a miracle happened in the first place could possibly make another miracle happen. I wonder if that wasn't her thought process. I wonder if that's why she didn't go to him. But that was her first. She went to the man of God. And I see her passion in some way coming out here. You know, God has given women a passion for their children. And there are times that I believe a mother has more endurance is more than a man sometimes because of their heart for their children. I could use illustrations, but I don't know that I should. But I see it here where she told him, let's ride. And I don't know how far they rode. Don't slack unless I tell you. Let's get on this. You're on your, they were both on two separate donkeys, I think. And they went. And we see that motherhood passion coming out. And I think that's good. That's fine. That's good. I also see that as she got there. And She wouldn't talk to Gehazi. She went for Elisha. She went to the man who she knew if anyone had answers, he would. And also, whenever Elisha said, Gehazi, go put this staff on the young child, she says, as thy soul liveth, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And we see a determination there. And anyhow, Elisha said, okay, I'll come. And he came. And so anyway, we know the story that Elisha was able by God to bring forth a miracle to bring this young man back to life. And look at her response. You would think the initial response would be, first of all, when the child was living, to run for the child. But she didn't. She bowed at Elisha's feet first and then took up her son. Today, young sisters, mothers, older ones, life will bring situations that you have to take to God. That there is no other place to go than to God. And I think that's what this woman was doing. She was in a situation that there was really no other person to help, but she had to go to God. Number 7, she had faith that all would be well. I find that interesting, that she didn't even tell her husband that the boy had died. He's like, well, I mean, why are you gone? And she said, all will be well. All shall be well. That's what she answered him. And so, as far as I know, she left to see Elisha, and her husband still didn't know that the child had died. Maybe we're missing it, but it appears that way. And when Gehazi come and ask her, you know, is the child well? Is your husband well? And she answered, it is well. Wow, what a response of faith. I think that was a tremendous response of faith. And regardless of how the outcome was, she was convinced that it would be well. I believe that that was not the typical response, but rather the response of a woman who was living in faith. In faith that God would work out the details in whatever sense that would be. Now, do you know that this story doesn't stop here? There's a several chapter break, and then it picks it up again. Turns me to 2 Kings chapter 8. Second Kings 8, verse 1. Then spake Elisha unto the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise, and go thou and thine household, and sojourn whithersoever thou canst sojourn. For the Lord hath called for a famine, and it shall also come upon the land 7 years. And the woman arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and sojourned in the land of the Philistines 7 years. And it came to pass at the 7 years' end that the woman returned out of the land of the Philistines, and she went forth to cry unto the king for her house and for her land. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, tell me, I pray thee, all the things that Elisha hath done. And it came to pass, as he was telling the king how he had restored a dead body to life, that behold, the woman, whose son he had restored to life, cried to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, my lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son, whom Elisha restored to life. And when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed her a certain officer, saying, restore all that was hers, and all the fruits of the field since the day that she left the land even until now. You talk about God arranging circumstances in a miraculous way. I don't know how else to read that chapter. But there was the king, it just happened to be, right, that the king at that time was asking Gehazi about Elisha and all that Elisha did. And so Gehazi was going down over the miracles Elisha did, and he just so happened to be talking about the Shunammite woman and the son he raised to life, and then she walks. And he's like, my lord, here she is. This is her, and this is her son. I think there could be several points here. I don't know. I changed the wording a few times. Well, the first one I'd like to get from this one is, faithful people heed the warnings of other faithful people. And I see that where Elisha came to her and said, arise, and go thou, In thine house tonight sojourn whithersoever thou canst sojourn, for the Lord hath called a famine, it shall come upon the land 7 years. And she arose and did after the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household. Now, some of us have been down here about 7 years. Now, how would you like you moved your whole household, however far away? It's about 7 years now. All right, turn around, go back where you were. 7 years is a pretty long transition, and I don't know how it all worked back then. But my point is, this wasn't as simple as saying, you know, you might want to watch your speed a little bit there. It wasn't that kind of a warning. It was kind of a warning that had a lot of implications behind it. But she listened and did that. And I thought about their relationship they had. I'm sure that had a lot to do with that. And, you know, the relationships with other faithful people are rewarding relationships. They really are. It is true that friends are an encouragement. It's also true that friends who warn and admonish are the best friends. I think of the verse in Proverbs, open rebuke is better than secret love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Somehow I think for Elisha to go and tell a Shunammite woman, pack your bags, move for 7 years, because there's going to be a famine, was, I don't know if it was hard for him to do or not, but it was not a light thing to consider. At least it wouldn't seem that way to us today. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear instruction and be wise, and refuse it not. And so here she was. She obeyed this man, and she was blessed for that. There's 7 years that she was away from the famine. Number nine, even though she was obviously a woman of courage, she was respectful to her authority. I think I'm fair in saying that she was an outgoing woman, a courageous woman. She wasn't the type that was always in the background. She was a woman who was pretended to be on the forefront. Wouldn't you agree? It seemed like the kind she was, okay? She was obviously respectful, though. I see that she consulted her husband about a room for Elisha, and they apparently did it together. She was respectful in the way she talked to Elisha. And, you know, she called him my lord, and there's different terms like that. And even it seems, you know, even in her anguish of soul, whenever her son had passed away, then she said, did I desire of a son of my lord? Did I not say, do not deceive thee? Do you deceive me? And I think what she was saying there, listen, I told you in the first place, this one the Lord wanted for me, and now it's just proof. And anyway, but yet she did it, I believe, in a respectful way. She called him Lord, for whatever that's worth. And when squatters had taken over her land, she went to the proper place to see about getting them back. And when she went to the king, as far as I know, she was going to the right place to get him back. And so, and I think of that in different times. You know, there's a sense in where, as women, mothers, wives, the sense where you have a unique position and maybe sometimes a harder position than men. I don't know. Sometimes as men, we think that being the one has to make the decision and all that. Sometimes I think that's the hardest point. I don't know. But I think it's also probably a hard position to be in whenever you realize that your place is to sit back and let someone else make a decision. I think that could be a hard place to be in at times. And yet, I want to hold forth that for you to be honored and to live a life of honor, that is the best thing to do. And I think about that in Proverbs 31 and the end of the chapter there in Proverbs 31 says, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. And that, the comment was made behind every great man is a great woman. And that is, I believe that is true. And it talks about strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come, in the future. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Sometimes I think when you are in the middle of raising children, and I think that is some of the most difficult years of life. I really believe that. But yet, how you live those years is so important, because if you want to rejoice in time to come, rejoice in the future, it's going to mean treating your husband and those in authority over you with respect. But he says that is a woman that will rejoice in time to come. That is the woman whose husband, he says, whose children will rise up and call her blessed. And that's what we want. Her husband also, and he praiseth her. I don't think we get there. You don't get there overnight. You don't get there as a young married lady. But it happened after years of faithful living. Maybe you didn't always do the perfect thing. Maybe you didn't always. But as you go forward respecting your husband, allowing him to take his place, your children will rise up, call you blessed, and you rejoice in time to come. What made this woman great? I think what we looked at was what made her a great woman. You see, it's all in what your perspective is, all in what your goals in life are. She was a great woman because she filled her place where she was in her time. This was how many years ago? She's gone. And now today, we live. And it is our time to live. And you know, the real thing, even though it's easy to say and hard to do, is just living faithfully one day at a time with the situations we face. And the Bible's told us, take one day at a time. And there's enough things going to happen tomorrow that you can worry about them then. But just be faithful one day at a time. And I know, I really do believe, if you're here and you're in the middle of raising children and life seems difficult, I do believe that that is some of the harder years of life. However, life changes and children grow up, and that brings a different set of challenges. And I think every stage of life has its challenges, has its good days and dark days. And the challenge is to just be faithful where we are and allow God to go to God for the things you don't know what to do with, and allow him to continue to do his work, because he cares more than we do. And continue to believe that even though reverse things may happen, that all will still be well for those who love him. Let us kneel for prayer.